votre quotidien. C'est sur Taïwan.
Society 13 and Frogzilla Radio proudly present Frog Watch with your friend and host, Big Tony Rousing, a.k.a. Frogs Watch.
opening track this week was In Dim Days by White Willow. This comes from their brand new album, Future Hopes. Anyway, Jakob and the folks in White Willow have come up with another good one, and one which I am sure we will revisit in the weeks ahead. So before I get too far ahead of myself, let me say I am Big Tony, your friend the Prog Squatch, and this is Prog Watch, and I would like to thank you all for coming along for the ride once again. Now I'd like to move into the bulk of this week's program, which is a feature on an enigmatic German musician and composer who likes to be known simply as T, like the letter, not the beverage now. T's proper name is Thomas Thielen, and he was a member of a band called Scythe many years back, before embarking on his solo career under the T moniker. Thomas is a fascinating and deeply intellectual man. He's a philosopher and educator, and is active in attempting to restore truth and accuracy to the news media. He also writes all the music, plays all the instruments, and engineers and produces every note you hear on his enigmatic albums. I had a long and deep conversation with Thomas a few weeks back, and we will hear some of that a little later. For now, let's listen to some of his music. This is A Sky-High Pile of Anarchy from his 2015 album Fragmentropy.
ever heard the last of it? Googling the fish, flowers in the window with a dehydration.
Oh,
Again, that was T or Thomas Thielen, song called A Sky High Pile of Anarchy from his Fragmentropy album in 2015.
Just listen to Progzilla.
Now let's get into my conversation with Thomas Thielen, the artist known as T.
So I guess we'll get rolling since you're recording that next album, right?
It might take a few days more or less, or a year or two or something. I'm not that much in a hurry about that.
So, this week our guest is Thomas Thielen, also known as T. German-born, correct, but educated somewhat in the United Kingdom?
Well, that would be a bit boasting, actually, to say, because I only spent there about a year traveling through youth hostels and stuff when I was studying English. But yeah, sort of an accent remained.
Okay, so it was more or less the school of life while you were in England, just being in England and learning to communicate with English people, I guess.
Yeah, with Scottish. I'm not sure if that's the same, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was traveling through Scotland a lot. Yeah.
Okay. So you pick up a brogue or whatever, huh? Or whatever that accent is, huh?
I'm not too sure. It's been some 20 years, so I'm not sure how much remained of that. You tell me.
Okay. You sound German, but your English is very excellent.
Thanks anyway. Don't let that be known to my pupils, actually. But never mind.
So you're with the band Scythe?
I was some 20-something years ago, and I feel a bit like the small-town version of Fish being still referred to by, well, Scythe.
Okay.
With Marillion, but no, I'm not. We actually never split up, but the last concert was some 20 years ago, so I guess that's that, actually.
Okay, yeah, kind of just never officially disbanded, but more or less not really doing anything at this point.
We just had a gig, and then we never met again. It's rather weird, actually, now come to think of it.
Yeah, that sounds unique among bands. You know, usually there's some kind of row or whatever, and they fall out or at least make some kind of announcement, you know, or just formally agree that it's over.
No, nothing really happened. Well, come to think of it, maybe they're waiting for my call. You never know.
Well, I'm glad I was able to arrange this call then.
Yeah, cool.
I didn't have to wait 20 years. No, but it is interesting to talk to you because I think you're a fascinating person. Rob and I are both big fans, Rob Fisher, and I want to thank him on air for helping set this up and introducing us on, at least through email.
Yeah, thanks.
So yeah, Rob's very much into the whole lyrical side of things, and he suggested a couple of questions that I think are really cool, insightful questions, you know?
Oh God.
So yeah, Rob says, he says that he feels that you're a philosopher, an educator who thinks deeply about a lot of things. One of your semi-joking claims for epistrophobia was that you spent longer on the lyrics than the music. So
that's right. Yeah, that's right. For this time, it's really true. It's the first time actually that the lyrics took longer than the music. But I had a couple of ideas for Fragmentropy, the album that preceded Epistrophobia, and I wanted to be better. I was not quite happy with the lyrics for Fragmentropy, although Rob, for instance, loved them, but I think they could have been better. So I took more time for it and actually really dig deeper and deeper into what words were the right words for which other words and stuff like that. Really, the opposite of writer's block, actually. Too much.
Too much, you had to actually pare it down, you know, cut stuff or, you know...
Yeah, it was, if you really, it's a kind of spiral, you know, you can say that that every word can still be questioned. Like if we're talking about philosophy, that for every word that you say, there's this German philosopher called Eugen Fink, who says that these words that you actually say are the words that are standing in the light, and those that you use to explain them are standing in the shadow. So come to think of it, you can always pull the other words out of the shadows and bring them in and think about those and then about those which are now in the shadows and stuff like that. So that's actually what I did, because that's what the album is about.
Very interesting.
So yeah, there seems to be a lot of work.
Yeah. So it seems there's a lot of stuff about, you know, the importance of beginnings and endings, you know. Are these artificial constructs just for our own story? You know, or is life actually just a flowing stream? I mean, you know, we get into this whole philosophical kind of thing with some of the lyrics.
Yeah, it's about that question, actually. I don't know. Is that really interesting for people who listen to that? That's great. It's great if it.
I hope so. You know, I hope
okay.
so.
Okay. The point is that Epistrophobia took the same story that I told on Fragmentropy. And told it again. Fragmentropy told it from a global, universal, outside perspective. And with Epistrophobia, and mostly Epistrophe, the last bit, I tried to do that from within. So that's very Paul Auster, actually. But yeah, it's the same story again. And I'll tell you what, there's a third album in a row that I'm writing at the moment that tries to take even a different approach at telling the same story from a different narrative perspective.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so, it's really. It sounds a bit pompous now that I say it, but it's really my attempt at writing novels without being good enough to actually write novels.
Have you ever felt inspired to write a novel? I've been a writer at times in my life, but I was always like a technical writer and didn't really. I never had a lot of the creative aspect as far as being a good storyteller.
Well, there's this famous saying by Philip Roth, I think it was, who says that inspiration is for amateurs and that the professionals just sit down and do it. And so maybe just get along. Well, but no, I have had some very desperate attempts at writing when I was about 18 or something. I think everybody does that, but I'm really not good at that. And so what I'm maybe a bit better at is poetry. And, well, poetry with music is called lyrics.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that I never push myself in that regard, but I know a lot of words, and I can, you know, convey ideas in cool. words probably better than a lot of people do today, because a lot of people are LOLing and all this other stuff, and I refuse to do that. I use proper grammar in all my, you know, even on Facebook when I'm like texting someone, more or less on Facebook, you know, sending private messages, capital letter, proper grammar, punctuation, you know.
So you're the other one.
Yeah, there aren't many of us left, are there?
Yeah, there aren't, but trust me on this, it's going to be huge. Yeah. You know, make grandma great again.
You say, okay, make grandma great. Well, no. I am someone's grandfather, so you know, whatever. It is what it is, I guess. But yeah, I never felt the inspiration. You know, I was never a very good joke teller either, you know. More or less had to memorize a joke really word for word, or, you know, I don't know. I just, like I said, I have a command of words, but I never really had the creative side. And even I do some music on the side, and I've always been more about constructing the music, and I have a better, I'm more creative at that aspect of it than the words. I think sometimes I'm just lazy and I let other people do it for me, because I have a couple of friends who are interested, and we do our little music project, and you know, they're more word people, and maybe I'm just lazy. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe if I was pushed, I could do it.
Yeah, this may as well be the case. I think it was also Philip Roth who said that the first line is a gift of the gods, and the rest is really hard work. That I can really subscribe to that.
That's a great quote. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. And I really feel that way too. So that's why the lyrics for Epistrophobia really took a long time for me to do, because there really was something I wanted to convey, and it was hard to do, because if you talk about reflexive logics, and you'd better practice what you preach, and that's a hard thing to do in this case.
It can be, yes.
Let's take a little break from the chat and listen to some more of T's music. This is The Aftermath of Silence from his album Psycho Anorexia in 2013.
Thank you. Fast food appointments, tangled like
Again, that was The Aftermath of Silence from the 2013 release by T, entitled Psychoanorexia. Now let's listen to some more of my epic interview with Thomas Thielen.
So there's a Bowie presence also in a lot of Epistrophobia. I think his death cast a shadow on the album, sort of. We get some nods to Major Tom and Black Star, so...
The Black Star, that's really by chance. Everybody tells me that, and I say, well, yeah, you're right. but there's really this this one passage where where I get into, I think it's rather obvious that that's a mixture of Slip Away and Space Oddity. And this is my nod in this direction, yeah. I don't want to feel in some way important enough to be allowed to do that. But I was really heartbroken when he died. I'm a big, big fan.
Yeah, I was a big fan too. Long time. He was a major talent, and yeah, he will be missed.
He was more than that for me. Whenever I was, I'm a rather insecure person as an artist. So whenever I asked myself, well, can I do that? Is that too far out? There was always David Bowie coming around in my head or on record and saying, well, I did worse or I did more. I went even further than you. And so that was some kind of guiding hand to get me into, experimenting.
Well, yeah, he was definitely an experimenter, the chameleon in a way, you know. He reinvented himself a number of times, you know.
Yeah, and then there was this, I really still adore the Low album, and I really adore Outside the Northern Adler Diaries, which I really love, still love this album. So, so much things that I, that I really define myself by. So this was the one celebrity death that really struck me.
Yeah.
Emotionally, yeah.
Yeah, I was also a big fan of Greg Lake, being a bass player, a self-professed bass player.
You know what?
A vocalist with a deep voice. You know, I always identified with Greg Lake, you know.
Okay. You know, I was just asked by German magazine Eclipsed what I think about Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and I had to tell the truth, really. I have not listened to ELP very much, actually. I couldn't quote one single song, really. I feel rather stupid in saying that and making progressive rock, but it's true. So I have to really get that gap filled.
Well, there's always, you know, there's always time. So, yeah, we hope anyway. Right.
Yeah, and but this Bowie thing, I'm always told that my voice sounds a lot like David Bowie, and I feel absolutely flattered by that, but I can't hear it. I don't hear it at all.
I guess I could hear a little more maybe Steve Hogarth in some of, you know, your phrasing and whatnot. Did anyone ever tell you that?
Yeah, I hear that all the time, and I'm also very, very flattered by that. But, you know, Steve Hogarth is one of the best singers there is, so who wouldn't want to be compared with him?
Sure, and he's so distinctive, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we have the same, actually we have learned it the same way. He always makes a big point of saying that he has not actually learned it, but there was some training he had. He confessed that back in the 90s, and it was the same Italian technique that I use. That I used to learn. I started singing for about 8 years classically, and I think you hear that. That's a connection.
So you actually studied classical singing, like opera, stuff like that?
Yeah, I took a sharp left turn when that came up, but the classical techniques with mask and resonances and stuff like that. So I know my voice rather well, and I know what I can do, and I also know very well what I can't. so I always stay in my comfort zone, and maybe that's why people think I'm a good singer. By the way, they didn't used to think that. I was harshly criticized when I started.
Really?
Really, absolutely. It was always, when in Scythe days, everybody said the band is good, but the singer is crap. and I guess they were right, because I was still learning.
Well, yeah, okay, so you were young. 20 years ago now, huh? Is that what you said? So, yeah. How much more of a musical background did you have before Scythe? I mean, were you always musical? Did any of your parents play music? Was it around the house, you know?
I was gifted with a very special kind of parents. Music is no part of their life whatsoever. But they had me classically educated. They knew that it is important, although they have a very, very awful taste of music if they listen to it anyway. But they somehow felt that it was important to me, and they supported me to a point, incredible. Let me tell you one story about that if we have the time. When I was at school and I was about 13, there was this band called Backyard Blues that was run by all these very experienced 18-year-old men. Get the picture. And they were looking for a bass player, and I just lied to them. I said, well, I can play the bass. I didn't even have a bass, nor had I ever played bass before.
Okay.
Right? So, and they said, well, sure, come around this afternoon and let's get something going. And I said, this afternoon? Oh, God.
That's a crash course.
And I told my teachers I was ill. And I went home and went to my mom and said, Mom, I need a bass. And I need, by the way, a bass amp. And she said, sure, let's get somewhere by the weekend. And how much money have you got? So let's see. I said, well, no, I need it today and I don't have any money. And so my mom looked at me sharply, and then she got me into the car, and we went to the next bigger city. I would live on the countryside, and so there was no bass around. And we went there, and we bought a bass and a bass amp because she saw how important it was. And then I had about 2 hours of learning how to play the blues on the bass, which is not that important, the basics, yeah.
Right.
That difficult being a guitarist anyway. And so, so I got the job in the band. And you know what? The bass we played, well, I still play it.
Wow. Okay, what kind of bass is it?
It's an Area Pro, actually. It's a very, very cool sound, very, very Lemmy Motorhead Rickenbacker.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how I was musically educated.
But you knew how to play guitar a little bit already, is what you're saying, so.
Yeah, okay. I knew what the strings were about, and I quickly learned that there was E, A, D, G, and that's about it. And well, these days, and when back then, the bass seemed like guitar for dummies.
That's why I started on bass, yeah.
you know what I'm talking about.
There are many bass player jokes out there, yes.
I know them all.
But hey, when you got a good one, it really makes a difference. I mean, you know, we can talk about some fabulous bass players in progressive rock, of course, you know, that men that redefined the role of the instrument, really.
Yeah. And I'm a huge fan of what Pete Revavas does, because he's so versatile. But always a team player. I consider the Tony Levin, Peter Trevavas approach a lot higher than what, let's say, all these bass solo players do. Well, team players. That's great. That's where I'm heading.
Yeah, elevate the song. You know, whatever is good for the song.
Yeah. You know, this bass line, I think it's Tony Levin who plays on Seal's Killer. Is it Killer? I think it's Killer. Where he only plays one or two notes, but these do the groove. It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that is a whole thing, too. Unto itself is the groove, you know, just locking in with the drummer and really propelling the song.
What I really love is that I got Tony Levin got me his funk fingers. There was a time when he made them, and I got them. And I love to play with the funk fingers. I know, Donia, if you're familiar with that.
Are they like those stick things that go on the ends of your fingers so you kind of like strike the string with it?
Exactly, yeah.
And get like that popping sound almost like that pop sound they used to do back in disco days or whatever. But it's
a bit like slapping, but with more thump. And that's basically my bass sound. I always use them a lot.
Are they complicated? I mean, I guess you got to be a finger player to do that. I was always a pick guy.
Me too, but it takes a lot of practice, but you can do that eventually. And it also makes your bass lines rather simple, which is not a bad thing.
Hey, if they're getting it done, right? And locking in and carrying the song forward. That's kind of the main role of the instrument in most music.
Yeah, but when you listen to Epistrophobia, you can also see that a lot of music was actually written on bass. There's the whole What If thing was written on bass, and there's a lot of things that if I had to play that live, I'd make a complete fool of myself. I admit to recording it bar by bar because it's so heavy to play.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really not that good.
That does bring up another line of questioning sometimes that I follow is just how do you feel about all the computer technology and all the things that we can do today to get the sound across, to get the sound from your head to the listener's ear? You know, how do you feel about it? You know, I mean, you can do so many great things on computers these days.
Well, how should I not like it? Well, I am it. The point is that I'm so much of a control freak that I have refrained from playing with bands completely. I don't really like that about me, but it seems to be, well, how I am.
Okay.
So I use computers a lot. I learned a lot about sound design and sound engineering. And I do my own mixes on computers, and I work for Stephen Slade in his development team and beta team, and have all these cool plugins there, and incredible. I couldn't exist as a musician without that.
Yeah, that's I love all the plugins these days. It's unbelievable to have like the Moog modular plugin, you know, where you can pull the wires, you know.
If you've ever played a real Mellotron, you know how good these plugins are and how comfortable.
Yeah, I have one that I like very much, the Redtron, you know. It's got all the classic sounds in it.
Yeah, you see. And without all the tapes mingling up and stuff.
Right, or getting stretched or hot or cold, depending on the temperature, you know.
You know, I always wanted to have these things in analog, with a vibe and stuff like that. And then I got it, and the first vibe I got was something broken.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I got back to my plugins.
Yeah, I have a friend who plays keyboards. He's still all into his, you know, he wants a B3. I'm like, what do you want that for? It's huge. Where would you ever take it? You know, it's expensive and huge. You know, you get yourself a good MIDI control keyboard kind of thing and MIDI up, and I've got a great virtual B3, you know, organ in a plug-in. It sounds fantastic, and you know, I got a rotary speaker plug-in, you know. Exactly. You can do all this stuff, you know.
You know, when I started, we still had these wooden bass speakers with 40 kilograms each and stuff, and never ever again.
Right.
Yeah, but still, in my living room, there's a real piano, and when I want to write stuff, I find myself sitting there and writing with a real piano and never at the keyboard.
Hmm.
Don't ask me.
Okay. Yeah.
Just happens like that.
It's just one of those things. Yeah.
One of those things.
Well, let's save some of that conversation with Thomas Thielen, a.k.a. T, for another program. On that program, I promise to have at least one exclusive new track from Thomas. For the time being, though, let's finish up with a song called Chapter 5 Contingencies. This is basically two song suite here called What If and What If Not. It comes from Thomas's latest album, Epistrophobia, released in 2016. Again, this is called What If and What If Not.
So we're not strangers anymore. Our love is friendship now. There'll be no doubt you're real. There is no doubt at all. Our last bad news I have, so bad it makes me cry. You see the devastation when you lose your alibi. Star, face down in the dark.
creativity, freedom, health, spirit, inspiration.
Yeah. single grave on the air. Everything we came for in circles blur.
once again. That was What If and What If Not, two parts of Chapter 5 of the Epistrophobia album, which was released in 2016 under the T moniker by our guest this week, Thomas Thielen. Like I said, I'll be coming back around to play some more of that interview, and we'll hear that in a few weeks to come.
Hi, this is Andy Rowe, bass player from UK Melodic Proggers The Room. You're listening to Prog Watch. I should do this voiceover thing for a living, really.
So in the meantime, remember that if you like the program, you can always follow me on Twitter at ProgSquatch to see my daily classic album, which gets some interplay going sometimes among my followers. Or you can like the Facebook page, Prog-Watch. You can also email me with questions, suggestions, comments, ProgSquatch, ProgSquatch at gmail.com. So in the meantime, don't forget to support the artists, and I'll catch you on the flip side. So prog on, brothers and sisters.
We don't play hits. If progressive music is your thing, Radio Progzilla is your station. Progressive music from your progressive rock station. Progzilla.